Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Blog Talk Radio.
Episode of Write Stream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann. I am an independent author, writer, blogger, editor, and the founder of the Write Stream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. And wherever you are listening in the world, I hope you're doing well and getting ready for another interesting interview with two fabulous guests. I'm happy to say here in South Florida today the sun is shining. We haven't seen much of the sun in the last couple of weeks, so I'm very happy to report that for now, at least, the sun is shining, but, you know, it's summertime, so you never know. I want to thank you so much for joining me, and before we get to our first guest, who I will properly introduce here in a moment, I just wanted to let everyone know that the Write Stream Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio features three hosts. We have Lisa Tarvez, who hosts a show called Just Believe, every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and if you've never listened to Lisa's show, you're in for a treat. She herself is an intuitive someone who at a very early age had an ability to communicate with angels. She's also a holistic healer. She's a certified holistic healer. And her show revolves around topics of spirituality, health and wellness, all of that good stuff, everything uplifting and useful and helpful. Lisa discusses on a weekly basis with experts in various fields on her program. So, again, I want to encourage you to check out Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And then on Mondays on the Write Stream Radio Network, John D. Gresham, who is a very accomplished author, military historian, and journalist, hosts a program called Military Monday with John D. Gresham, and he always brings on experts in various aspects of the military, whether it's different branches of the military or the Department of Defense, anything having to do with military history and the United States military, John's got covered on his program. And he airs, again, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, so I encourage you to check that out. If you've missed any of our previous broadcasts, you simply go to blogtalkradio.com/writestream, that's W-R-I-T-E, stream, just like it sounds, and you can listen to all of our archive programs. We're pretty excited because our numbers have been growing steadily since we began broadcasting in March, and we're looking forward to more great programming in the future. And although I cannot give details at this time, I can announce that I will be adding a new show to the lineup, probably starting sometime in July. And that show looks like it's going to air on Wednesday evening. So please stay tuned for details because I'm very excited about that. All right, well, I'm also very excited about my first guest today. Her name is Casey Dawes, and she is a romantic suspense author. She writes stories about love. She's also a self-published author, so I'm going to talk to her about that. I also want to talk to her about her thoughts on social media marketing and her work as an experienced small business coach. Like so many of my WriteStream guests, I also met Casey on Twitter, where we quickly became friends. And before I go ahead and bring her on the air, I just want to read, in her words, a little bit about her from her website bio. And Casey says, "All my life I've believed in love, even when everything else going on around me told me I shouldn't. And all my life I've wanted to write. In fact, I never quite gave it up. But my dream to become a fiction writer seemed elusive. Too many things got in the way. You know how it is, kids, jobs, saving the world. It's exhausting. In 2012, the dream became a reality. Thanks to the friends in my life who believed in me, forced me to start writing seriously, and giving me a kick in the you-know-where when I needed it, my first contemporary romance novel, California Sunset, was published by Crimson Romance. I've also published a few erotic romance short stories under a pen name. What fun. My self-publishing efforts have resulted in Tour Guide to the Wineries of the Santa Cruz Mountains. The origins of that book is also a story about love. After my husband and I created the first incarnation of that book, we figured out we loved each other enough to get married. Since we'd both been burnt before by love, it was quite a hurdle to overcome. What a great love it's been. In 2013, we'll be celebrating our 10th wedding anniversary. Look for the occasional blog post about my book, short stories, or most likely about balancing my life and writing. It's an adventure. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome to WriteStream Tuesday, author Casey Dawes. Hi, Casey.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. It's so wonderful to talk to people from other parts of the country. I live in Montana, where it's also sunny today. And the eagles and the herons and all the other birds are going by, which is just a lovely way to have a day. In fact, it sometimes gets a little distracting.
Well, I certainly know the feeling. Well, that sounds just beautiful. Just must be breathtaking out there. And I hope someday to be able to visit Montana because it just looks like just a wonderful place to live and visit. Mm-hmm. So Casey, I really loved I love what you wrote on your bio, and I just want to say you're so inspiring. But let's start. I'm going to kind of elaborate on what I just read from your blog. So, because for so many successful authors, it usually is an avocation, and in many cases it does take other people to kind of give you that kick in the pants that you mentioned, and to really get yourself in gear and work on it. So, tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then how you finally became a writer and got published.
Okay. Well, I won my first short story contest at the age of 10, so I have been writing quite a long time. I wrote through my various occupations. I have a master's degree in theater, and as I tell people, that totally explains why I spent 30 years in the tech industry. But I wrote articles about theater. I wrote a lot of articles about the tech industry, always nonfiction, but always kind of keeping my hand in the writing process. And I also wrote two books. Should you ever really need to fall asleep some night, you can pick up a copy of Exploring IBM E-Business Software, and I guarantee it will put you to sleep. Through all that, I had a lot going on in my life. I had children, I had stepchildren, I had difficult marriages. It took me a long time to, as one of my friends said, get it right, mainly because I needed to sort out my own issues first. And you'll see that's a theme for people who read my books, that tends to reemerge as a theme in a lot of my stories, is the heroine, both the heroine and the hero, need to deal with issues that they themselves are bringing to the table before they can actually find the love that they deserve and want. And I try and take real situations for real people. And then that's how the real love can actually come to be. But while I was doing this tech thing, and as my kids started getting older, I started going back. I wrote some poems and some short, again, nonfiction article for the children's market. And eventually started writing what would become California Sunset. And I think it was Hemingway that said, how do you write? You open a vein and bleed.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I did in that book. I mean, there's things from my life in that book and things that I've experienced. And really the lesson that I learned, which was I really had to love myself first in order to get the love that I wanted.
Yeah, that is such an important lesson.
Yeah, so I moved from California, where I was living at the time, to Missoula, Montana. I got caught up in the Great Recession and lost a whole bunch of things. And we came here to make a new start. And less than a week after being here, I met with this fabulous group of women who were writers or wannabe writers. And shortly thereafter, there was an opportunity. Well, actually, it was a year later. There was an opportunity. Crimson Romance started. In fact, they're celebrating their year anniversary this month with a lot of great giveaways and things like that. And I was contemplating putting this novel out to them, and one of the ladies says, if you don't, I'm going to kill you.
So, oh, wow. Pretty serious.
Obviously, I had to put it out, and within 3 weeks, I had an acceptance. So,
wow, 3 weeks. That's incredible.
Yeah. So you probably heard me in Florida when I screamed and said, wow.
Yeah, because you know what, Casey, I think that's the fastest any guest has told me they, you know, received an acceptance. Most of the people I've interviewed so far, it's been several months or even a year or more. So that's phenomenal.
Right.
Now what is Crimson Romance? Now tell us a little bit about them, and then I want to go back and ask you some other questions. But
sure.
Are they an online publisher, or how do they work?
They're what they call a digital first publisher, so that the books come out in e-books first. They're actually a subsidiary of F&W Media, who publishes Writer's Digest.
Oh, okay.
So the main parent company has been around for a while, and they launched this romance line last June, and they were very hungry for books. So I think that contributes to the three-week time. Their first editor was Jennifer Lawler, and they've just hired a new one, Tara, and I can't remember her last name yet. She's just not in my head. But they do a lot of different kinds of books, from paranormal. They've got some steamy lines, contemporary. They do westerns. So they're trying to do a lot of different things. So once your book has been out somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 months as a digital, then they'll do a print-on-demand book. The issue with that is you can't get them in places like Barnes & Noble because the policy is a no-return policy, and bookstores just won't deal with that. I can get them into the local independents here on a consignment basis, so I'll take that.
Yeah, that's excellent. I know, and you know what, Casey, and it's good. I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to talk about today. We'll circle back around to your books and your writing process, but I also wanted to talk about how new media have really completely revolutionized the publishing industry, and that's certainly the case with your publisher, Crimson Romance. So do you feel overall it's been a net positive for authors, and what are some of the things you do to help promote your work online?
Well, just as I tell my clients, my small business clients, and I frankly say to other authors too, you have to market every day. You have to do something every day. And the social media makes it very easy to do that. And yet, at the same time, people don't always do it right. Because people get into this sell mode. And even with small business, it's more about developing a relationship before you try and sell anybody anything. And that's what I try and do. And that's how you and I started having a conversation on Twitter, was that I think you had somebody on that was talking about the military, and I kind of snagged into that. And that's I think, the part that's important, is that you have to treat each reader as the person they are and develop that relationship and allow people to get to know you as a person.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. It's definitely about building relationships, even online. And I found, you know, I self-published my novel back in 2008, and I found that people were just as interested in me as the author as they were in the book. But just as you're saying, too, you have to be interested in other people and find out what they like. You know, they may not even be interested in reading whatever genre you've published your book in. So, but yet it's still important to build those relationships. So I couldn't agree with you more. It's engagement over broadcasting.
Right. And as somebody said to me in business once, there's 200 people behind every person that you talk to. So they may not, and I've done it for other authors where I've said, okay, if you like blah, 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 you might like this book. And, you know, somebody that may not read romance that you're engaged with for some other reason may say to, you know, a mother, an aunt, a sister, a daughter, you know, you like romance, why don't you try this person out? Or they might buy the book as a gift or something like that.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's, I think, you know, one of the things I learned, it's an ongoing process, just as you said, you know, building those relationships. You never know who you're talking to, one person, but as you just said, there's 200 people connected to them, and you just never know where those interested readers are going to come from and that person can recommend you. So that is such a great point. And I have to say, I mean, most of my guests so far on WriteStream have come from Twitter, and there's such a huge writers community on Twitter that's been so helpful to me in broadcasting the show and certainly finding guests for the Twitter chat, which you're going to be my guest on Thursday, that I think that it's really important, and I want you to speak to this. You know, sometimes writers are so focused on being behind the computer and writing the book that they tend to neglect the marketing piece, or they're reticent about getting out there and verbally articulating their work. What are your thoughts on the importance of writers being able to communicate their work and interact with people, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's in person?
It's vital. I mean, that's the short answer. The long answer has to do with the creative person that doesn't really want to market, and far too many authors resent marketing, and that's going to trip those authors up right from the get-go, because marketing is really about building relationships. And as you said, being able to explain why I write and what I write, and in a very short manner, so that a person can decide what it is they want to, whether they want to engage with me and my books or not. And the other piece is, very often, particularly with my books, I write, like I said, about real problems. So neither the heroine or the hero come out unscathed in my books. So the book coming out in 2 weeks, California Homecoming, she's already pregnant when the book starts. He's coming back from the war with a prosthetic leg and all the baggage that coming back from war gives you. So they're flawed people right from the get-go. But I'm also talking about realistic issues that tie into my novels. So how we care for our veterans is a very important topic. The census just came out and said the increase in single mothers, I think the age range is 24 to 36, has leapt incredibly over the last 10 years. That's a social issue. So even if people don't want to talk about my books, there's other ways I can engage them in conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's excellent.
Not sure I answered your question.
No, you absolutely did, Casey. And I just wanted to ask you, what social media platforms do you use the most in building these relationships online? And then we're going to talk about in person in a minute, but I wanted to find out what platforms you use and how you go about doing that, you know, for success.
Well, I started out with Facebook because it was the most familiar thing to me, because I've got, between stepkids and kids, I've got six of them scattered across the country. So that's kind of how I communicate with them, because I don't get to go see them very often. And so it was a natural extension to go to Facebook. I had been an early adapter of Twitter. I think I've been on Twitter since 2008. So, you know, those 30 years in the tech industry sometimes come in handy.
That's right.
But I hadn't used, I mean, I found people on it, but I hadn't really, and I'm going to say that I'm still learning a lot about Twitter. But what I try and do on Twitter, I use a tool called Hootsuite.
Me too.
So what
yes,
I try
love
and
it.
Do on Twitter is look for people who it might be striking up a conversation with, like I did with you and I do with other people, or something that I know my followers might be interested in. So if I've read a book and it's a Kindle Daily Deal, I'll retweet that. So I'm looking for those kinds of things. I don't think I've plumbed it to its depths. I was so excited yesterday. I attached a picture to a Twitter for the first time. it's a little thing. So I've got more work to do there. I use Pinterest, and I think Pinterest is still trying to figure out what it wants to be when it grows up. But it's very handy, because I can find visuals of people that look like what I imagine my characters are, or use some of my photographs of sunsets and what have you, of the California coast where my books are set. They also have a feature that you can put your book or whatever on Pinterest with a price, and it'll go in their gift catalog. So I've done that kind of thing. And the other one I'm getting more active on is Goodreads. I get careful about that one because I want to, with any of these, I think you have to lurk first. You have to go and figure out what are the rules, what are the best ways of communicating with people. And so with Goodreads, I have to be careful not to promote my books in a way that's offensive and yet still get into that conversation. So
right.
that proves interesting. But I think that's a good place, because there's a lot of conversations on Goodreads talking about how do you find a book. Because let's face it, there's a lot of drivel out there. There's a lot of badly edited books, badly written books. And how do you, I mean, even if they're free, how do you not waste your time? Because that's a valuable resource, too. And
oh,
so
sure.
There's a lot of conversation going on Goodreads about how do you find those gems? You know, it's like we're all editors going through the slush pile these days. And they're talking about really looking at reviews, looking at recommendations from other people. So, again, it's getting into those relationships. But it takes time, and it takes a willingness to be open in a way that I think a lot of people are afraid to be, particularly older authors are afraid to be online. And, again, because of the tech industry thing, it's like breathing to me.
Yes, I say it's second nature to you. Yeah, and
yeah.
It is. It's so important. I just think it's opened up a world of possibilities. And especially now, if you're an independent author, and I still say, just as you were talking to about, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that's poor quality, I think it's incumbent. Now we have this opportunity where you can be self-published, but it's also incumbent upon that author to make sure that your book is professionally edited and you're putting something out there that's of good quality. But if you do that and you really master this whole marketing side of things and you aren't afraid to get yourself out there, even if you are, but you make yourself do it anyway, I mean, there's such a huge upside to it that I, you know, that authors are missing out if they're not engaged in social media. I mean, I had one, you mentioned Pinterest. I had an author on a couple of months ago who told me, just as you were saying about the images and finding images that relate to your characters and your plot, she created storyboards for her books, and she said that helped her to really sell books. I mean, she saw a definite increase in sales when she did that. So each one has its unique, I guess each platform has its unique advantages, and it's just learning how to get in there and really use them. And like with Twitter, I was explaining earlier today about the hashtags to two friends of mine who aren't that familiar with Twitter yet. They're just getting into it. And you mentioned Hootsuite. Well, I joined it like you did around 2008, Twitter. And it wasn't until somebody told me about Hootsuite that I finally, like the light bulb finally went off, because it organizes everything so easily in the columns. And you're like, oh, my God, now I get it.
It does make life a lot easier.
Yeah.
So it can be engaging, it can be fun, and I think the other thing that's important is putting time parameters around it so that you can get back to your real job, which is writing, or in my case, my three other real jobs that kind of keep body and soul together here.
Right.
So
that's the other part of that flip side. You know, like anything in life, it can also be negative if you get too caught up in you know, interacting and having fun with people. Because let's face it is a lot of fun. I love being on Twitter. But on the other hand, you have to be very disciplined about using it strategically. And I find I like the feature that allows us to schedule tweets. And I find that helps me a lot to stay on track, because I know if I schedule them and I want to promote certain things like this show today, I can go ahead and do that and have them going out. And I know that it's at least getting out there if I need to be focusing on my client's book or whatever else it is. So you do make an excellent point, Casey.
Right.
With that.
So one of the things I did want to bring up is my second book in the series called California Wine will be the Kindle Daily Deal next Monday on June 17th. So that means it'll be out there for 99 cents. So I'm hoping that lots of readers will take it, or lots of listeners will take advantage of that.
Fantastic,
And then California Homecoming comes out on June 24th. And I'm really excited. I think it's my best book yet, and I'm really excited about it. The early reviewers have been really positive about it. So,
fantastic. Well, let's circle back and talk about that. Let's start with your first book, Casey. Tell us how that process went. And I know you mentioned that you incorporate a lot of your own experience into the book. But take us through that process of writing your first book, what that was like, and, you know, how long it took to get through the writing and editing process.
It took years. The reason it took so long is I'd had a science fiction fantasy novel that I'd worked on for years and years and years, and there's still people going, when are you going to finish that? And I'm like, eh. But it's, you know, it was a matter of I had to get it down, and actually when I wrote it, it was a combination of things, and I pulled a lot of it out, and that became the second book. But it was studying my craft. It was going to a critique group again. This was down in California, and I was the only romance writer. So there was a resistance to the genre from some of my other critique partners. So I had to be careful where I was actually accepting their advice in terms of good writing versus what they didn't like about the genre. But it went through probably 5 or 6 edits before I sent it to Crimson. And like I said, they had me rip probably a third of it out to meet their length guidelines, and then it went through an edit process. And it was hard, and it was actually at the same time fairly cathartic, because I did get to exorcise a lot of my ghosts, and yet be able to make a story that other people can relate to. And there's people that don't like it. I think my favorite non-liking review, now the title of the book is California Sunset, and somebody that got it, read it, and said it was a little too California for her. And I went, well, okay. You know, those are kind of the reviews that you kind of go, okay, what were you thinking?
It's not as if the title was subtle or anything, you know, about
no.
That is too funny. Go ahead.
The second one actually grew out of the material I had taken out of Sunset, as well as when my husband and I were dating, we discovered that we both liked to drink wine. We were living right outside the Santa Cruz Mountains in California, which actually is a fairly fabulous wine-growing region that nobody knows about. And we decided to write a book, like I said, and self-publish this book back, and this was, we were going to do a print book, and we did a print book. We sent a CD and a large check off to Singapore, and they sent back a boatload of books. The research was really hard. We had to go to all these wineries and drink wine. And he took pictures, and I wrote about it, and we learned a lot about wine and what the process is to make it. So I was able to tap that for the second one.
Excellent. Now, that book is available on Amazon and anywhere else. I know I did see that on your website, your blurb about the Santa Cruz wine region. So,
the tour guide is available only on Amazon right now. It's the actual update because we did that wine book 10 years ago. So the tour guide is the update to that book, and it's only available on Amazon right now. I'm waiting for my husband to finish up the pictures for the second edition of the main book, Mountain Vines, Mountain Wines. But, you know, that may occur some year when pigs fly. I don't know.
That's funny.
A little bit of frustration.
Yeah, patience, right, is required, yeah. I guess. I wanted to ask you about something you mentioned a little earlier, too, and that was, you know, your writers group and the encouragement you received from them, because it's very interesting, and I know, you know, each individual is unique, and we all have our own character traits and things like that, but I've had writers come on and tell me they swear by writers groups, that they recommend everybody join one, to others who say, no, I like to write independently. And so what are your thoughts on that, and how, you know, for somebody that does it, that is looking for a supportive writers group, what are some of the things they should look for in finding one that really connects with them?
I would say compatibility, that you're going to be with a writers group in each other's business, because most writers group, particularly if they're all women, you get beyond the book real fast. Sometimes there's some drama. But it's really the ability for everybody to give constructive criticism and take constructive criticism. If you get somebody that's real defensive about everything you suggest, you're going to get frustrated. If you yourself can't handle what somebody says, then that's a problem. You can't be in a group if you can't take constructive criticism. And most groups I know are pretty good about not being really, like, nasty. You want to avoid anybody that's nasty or working out their own issues, and also a group that's at the same level. If you have one person that's really forging ahead and everybody else that's, you know, still working on their first book and not really doing the work necessary, that's going to be a problem. My favorite critique comment was from one of my current partners, and she at some point was looking at the guy that I was trying to make into the hero in California Wine, and basically told me that he just wasn't hero material. And I had to really sit there, and I went back and rewrote, because she was absolutely right. So
interesting. Yeah, so it, you know, it, it, when you get that good feedback, it can make you a better writer, provided, like as you said, you're in the right situation, the right group. And I think it's pretty, I think it's fairly easy to determine what's constructive criticism and what's just coming from a place of maybe jealousy or envy. I think if somebody's constructively criticizing you, they know that you can be better, or that the storyline could be stronger, or the character could be better developed, and they want you as a writer to reach your potential. And so for me, it would be they offer the critique, but also ways of how to improve versus just tearing somebody down. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes. Yes, I'd agree with it. Sometimes the fix is easy. You can see it. But sometimes it does require that talking through, and it's, well, you could do this or you could do that. And that's where a group comes in, is you can brainstorm with the group. Two things you have to be careful about with that, though, are groupthink, so that everybody's novels start sounding the same. You got to be careful with that one. But on the flip side, if you only ever talk to yourself, you can't get the perspective you need to really look at your book critically.
Right, that's true, absolutely. And you know, and again, with social media and the internet, it's fairly simple to kind of locate different groups, and it's just a matter of, as a writer, maybe you might have to spend some time checking out different groups before you find the one that's perfect for you, that complements you, and that's going to really help you sort of get to that next level in your writing career.
Right, so. And one of the issues that we do have here in Montana is a very sparsely populated state. It's the fourth largest state in the union, and it's not got very many people in it. We got more cows than we have people, I think. So, I mean, we have some fairly well-known authors here. I mean, Kat Martin is in a small town not far from where I live, and B.J. Daniels, who is a Harlequin bestseller, lives in a little tiny town out in the middle of nowhere. So in those cases, you know, we get together once a year for a conference, which is on our website, Montana Romance Writers. If you want to come up to Montana, we're having a conference in Billings in September. And that's about the only opportunity a lot of people have to get to see other writers because, like I said, a lot of cows.
Yeah. And they're not really into writing, I guess. So, yeah.
Nah.
So, Casey, let's talk about, you know, just what are some habits that you got into as a writer that have really helped you? You know, for example, do you journal every day? Do you set aside specific time every day where you're going to write and kind of tune everything else out? Like, what are some good habits that have worked for you in, as far as, you know, being able to produce your books and kind of stay on track with your goals in terms of getting them published?
After the first book and somewhere about the middle of the second book, I really got into the rhythm of saying, I'm going to get this word count today. And when I'm really pushing through the first draft of a book, I'll really go for word count, because what I've discovered is I really need to turn that editor off. Otherwise, I'll labor over every word and I won't create anything. And what the first draft allows me to do is really figure out my plot points and figure out what the character is trying to tell me. Because often what I think about the character at the beginning of the book is not what happens. The characters will all of a sudden take on a life of their own. And that's when I know I've got something, is when they're speaking to me and saying, I wouldn't do that, you know. So I've got to,
yeah.
You know, and sometimes the downside of that is you may get to the end of the book and realize you've got to make major changes at the beginning. But it's very much just getting the plot line. I liken it to musicians. They get down the melody line and then enhance it. And that's kind of what I think about when I'm doing the first draft. Right now I'm actually working on a synopsis for another book because somebody wanted to see a synopsis before I actually sit down and wrote the book. But it's going to be a fairly lengthy synopsis. So after I get the first, probably, it usually winds up being about 40,000 words, 40 or 50,000 words. When I get that down, then I'll go back and really enhance what the characters look like, descriptive phrases, making sure that things are cleared, that I've got all the pieces I need at the beginning to make the ending make sense. And then it's really editing. My husband always reads it so that he can find, you know, the dumb mistakes. And then right at the editor will get it and do the editing. But right at the end at the galley, I read it backwards. And
oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, kind of almost paragraph by paragraph backwards. And I'm still amazed at how much I catch. I mean, one of the things I just caught in California Homecoming by reading it that way was I changed somebody's name, a minor character, but, you know.
Wow.
Like, yeah. So, but before I even sit down and write, I'll have something stirring around the back of my mind. My one real romantic suspense, which is Chasing the Tumbleweed, which was actually published by Books to Go Now, came out of an incident that my husband and I had when we went to California last year. We went through Nevada. We like doing these. We have a deal. I get to go to a quilt shop. He gets to drive over a dirt road. So, you know, we
nice.
Like our adventures. And we were going through the middle of Nevada, in the middle of nowhere, because a lot of Nevada is like that. And we found a rest stop. I mean, it was a 2-lane highway, tumbleweed, nothing. And these, you know, we're desperate for a rest stop because there's no trees you can go behind because there's nothing except tumbleweed and sagebrush. And so we get there, and there's this red ice chest in between the two restrooms. And we took care of our business and went and looked at the ice chest, and finally he opened it. And there was a bunch of Louis L'Amour books in it. But we spent the next hour talking about what could have been in the ice chest other than books. And so that whole concept just tumbled around the back of my mind until I sat down and wrote it last December. So what else was in the ice chest?
Fascinating. You know, you just never know when inspiration is going to strike.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think for writers, well, I mean, and I find inspiration like you do in real life, and you just never know what kind of interaction, or just like you described your road trip, what's going to kind of spark that creative flow. And you know, in your case, another book. It's just fascinating to me how it works for each person, where you can find that. And I believe when you were talking earlier about just the different experiences you had in life first, you know, in your work in the tech industry before you're really able to become an author, it's so true. I think with writing, you know, it's the more experience you have, I think, in real life, the better a writer you can become, because you can pour that emotion and those experiences into your characters and into your plot.
Right. Right.
Now, Casey, so you are also, let me mention to everyone listening, if you would like to call in and ask Casey a question, I neglected to give out the number before, the call-in number is 347-945-7246. Don't be shy. Again, it's 347-945-7246. If you have a question or comment, please feel free to call into the show. But, you know, it's interesting how different experiences kind of create that, and life experience as well. Now, Casey, were you someone, and you might have mentioned this before, but were you someone that always journaled as a kid? I mean, it was always...
I scribbled a lot as a kid. I had a diary. I'm still carting some of them around. And did a lot of, when I was a teenager, you know, he loves me. He loves me not. I mean, going back and reading them now makes you cringe. The creative, what is that book? Cameron, Artist's Way. The Artist's Way. She recommended writing 3 morning pages, which means before you get out of bed, you just write 3 pages longhand. And doing basically a mind dump. And I did that for years and years and years. And, in fact, I do assign it to my coaching clients periodically, and it does show up in my books because one of the figures in all three books is this life coach. And she always assigns journaling first thing in the morning. I found it incredibly wonderful to work out a lot of the issues that I had to deal with in my life. Now I find I'm not doing it so much, and I think it's partly because I'm writing so much that actually what I do tend to do in the morning is get up and do crossword puzzles just to get my brain going, and not so much writing.
Them.
Because I've been writing all night in my head. You know, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and go, well, I could do that, you know. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I'm doing less journaling. And also I think the other reason is my life is good. You know, I went through a long period of where life wasn't so good. And not to say we don't have issues, and everybody does, but I love being back in Montana. I got to go over the weekend and take a quilting class that was given on the edge of the Rocky Mountain front, which is just, it's gorgeous and green and snow-capped mountains and everything you can think about the West at the moment. Financially, I wish I'd found that millionaire, but oh well. And, you know, I'm finally getting to write, and I've got some good, solid business coaching clients that I love, and I quilt, and then I just, this year I started substitute teaching again, and all that kindergarten love is just phenomenally wonderful. So life is good. So.
Fantastic. You are a woman of many talents, Casey. And I wanted to talk a little bit about your life coaching, if you don't mind. How did you get into that? And I mean, do you take clients from all over the country? Because of technology now, you know, we don't really necessarily have to be physically nearby. How does that all work?
I decided in the early, somewhere around 2001, 2002, that I was really tired of learning new things every 5 minutes in the tech industry, I wanted to do something different, get back to, you know, because I'd made this kind of left-hand turn after graduate school, and I wanted to get back closer to what I had been doing, what I loved, and I took classes from something called Coach U, and those were all online classes, group coaching, and written work, and so I started my practice. I did do life coaching for a while. I took some other supplemental classes, including something, a marvelous program called Now What, where, you know, people are struggling, trying to figure out what it is they want to do when they grow up, and it's a great method to use to kind of uncover that. But what I found was, you know, it goes back to marketing. People, even though they really want it, and I specialize particularly in women, they may need or want life coaching, but they don't want to pay for it. And whereas I found if I went to business coaching for women, I'd wind up doing life coaching anyway, because no matter what you do, your life shows up. And but people were willing to pay for that. And yes, I do it all over the country. I've got a lot of my clients still from California. We do it via phone. I've had clients from Dubai, who gal found me on the internet, and she called me, and she was starting a cosmetic line. So I spent some time with her. And so it's a rewarding thing. It's particularly for people. I'm pretty... you got to be ready for me. You know, it's if somebody's going to dither, I will eventually wind up firing them, because I really want to help people, and I'm not into milking people for, you know, for the sake of milking them, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And I admire that, Casey, because you want results. And I'm sure it's got to be frustrating if you're the life / business coach, if you have a client that's really not willing to apply themselves. I mean, they might say they want to make all these changes, but then if they don't, they're not willing to take the necessary steps, I can see where that would be frustrating from your perspective. So I think that's a great policy.
Yeah. Yes, I do take clients from all over the country.
Now, how can people find out about your life coaching services? Is there a separate website for that, or just let us know where we can find that?
That's on something called Wise Woman Shining.
.com? WiseWomanShining.com. Okay, excellent. And again, you know, the more you're talking, again, it's amazing how technology, I mean, I interviewed authors from Germany and other countries, and you had a client from Dubai. I mean, it's just the opportunities that have opened up, and as you know from all your years in the tech industry, and I was laughing when you said, you know, I was tired of learning something new every 5 minutes, because just as a user, technology user, I feel that way. Or even with social media, I'm like, somebody tells me about something else, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's another platform I need to get involved in. I can't do it. I'm overwhelmed. You know, my goodness.
I tend to limit some of that, because a lot of it is just things getting thrown against the wall and let's see what sticks. But, yeah, I mean, one of my close friends lives in Singapore, and we chat periodically using Skype. So, you know, for people that need that FaceTime, that's another technology people could use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Skype is wonderful. I highly recommend that everybody get Skype if they don't have it, and it's free. And, I mean, I decided to upgrade my plan so that I can call people's phones from Skype if I want to. But, you know, certainly you don't even have to do that. I mean, it's amazing what's out there at relatively little cost or no cost at all that can be very helpful. Which brings me to another point, Casey, just getting back to writing as a profession and being an author. How do you feel about blogging, and how important do you think that is as both a marketing tool and maybe a tool to help you hone your writing skills?
I think blogging... It depends on when you ask me. I mean, it's, you know, if I've got, I blog a lot. I have 3 websites that I keep up. I've got a quilting website. I've got stories about love, and I have that other person that I pretend to be occasionally that has a blog. If I'm feeling like I need to write a whole bunch of blogs and I haven't got any inspiration, then I don't like blogging. But it is something that, there's a couple of reasons. One is the frequency of material you put out, plus paying some attention to search engine optimization, it can drive people to your site, particularly if you combine it with things like social media. And it can help you, just like Twitter can really help people write better, because you've got to figure out how to say a lot in 140 characters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Blogging, if you're paying attention to it, can help you write, because it can help you come up with short, concise ideas and really try and find something interesting and engaging for people to read. However, it is something that you have to commit to, and I admit I get sporadic about it, and that's not good. It's better than if I were more consistent with it. And something I read actually that I've just started doing, I think email is still a huge device for marketing. If you can get people on your email list, It's great, because then you can do targeted mailings to people that say, hey, I've got a new release coming out. Debbie Macomber is my goddess when it comes to marketing. And so she's got a mailing list, you know, and she sends out an email periodically, and I pretty much always read it. And again, it's very chatty. It's about her. And yes, she promotes her books, but you still get the sense of who she is. But someone had said on a class I took about blogging that if you have an email newsletter and you put in your email newsletter, have you seen these blogs, these recent or popular blogs on my site, and you can tell which ones are popular by using Google Analytics. But then you can drive traffic to your blog from your email list. So it's all connected. So, yes, I believe blogging is necessary. I participate in blog tours. I'm doing a whole bunch of blogs beginning the 24th at various people's sites to promote my book. So, yeah.
Okay, so for anyone listening who doesn't know what a blog tour is, why don't you explain that to us briefly?
Okay, a blog. Well, there's two ways of doing it. Sometimes, like Books to Go Now is sponsoring a blog tour. No, they're sponsoring a blog hop. Okay, so blog hop is you go hopping from one person's blog to another. They'll give you links to go, and everybody does their own blog. A blog tour is I have something like 8 different blogs on 8 different people's websites that will come out. One couple will come out on the 24th, couple will come out on the 25th. And the object is to get yourself to audiences that may not know you. And also, you've got to really write blogs that are different so that people who may go to more than one aren't reading the same thing over and over again. So that really stretches your writing chops and imagination to do that.
So you're saying you write guest posts for these other blogs? Maybe I'm not. Okay. Fantastic.
Yes. And sometimes they'll give me questions. Like, okay, here, pick 3 of these questions and answer them. And that helps. Sometimes I just want a character. I did one when I did Chasing the Tumbleweed that I actually had a ball with where it was a character interview. So I took my main character from that story and interviewed her, and it was a lot of fun because she's kind of a quirky character, and she really came alive for me while I was doing that.
Fantastic. It sounds like a lot of fun too. Really, that's a very creative marketing ideas. I love that. But yeah, I agree with you. I firmly believe that, you know, all writers should maintain a blog and just find a way to stay consistent with it and participate in some of these things. And just as you were saying, support other bloggers and writers as well. You know, whether you have a blog role or you link to them, that's so important. And it helps you to build those relationships too with other writers and help each other kind of promote your work.
Yeah, and one of the things that authors really need to be careful of is the green monster, the jealousy, mm-hmm. and really reaching out and helping each other rather than getting this scarcity mentality of, gee, if I tell you about so-and-so's book, then nobody will buy my book. And the opposite is totally true. Because readers read far faster than any one of us can write a book.
Right. That's such a great point. And there's so many different interests out there and different readerships and audiences that I just think it's endless, the opportunities for writers. And I think you might as well support each other. You know, I agree with you 100%. Casey, my gosh, I can't believe we have like 2 minutes left. The interview has gone by so quickly. But before I let you go, let's go ahead and tell everyone where they can find you, you know, on the internet and on Twitter. And I again want to remind everyone that this Thursday on Twitter at 11 a.m. Eastern, Casey will be my guest for the WriteStream Twitter chat. If you've never participated, it's a lot of fun. It's like an interview, except it's all done through typing, always using the hashtag WriteStream. So I hope you'll join us on Thursday for that. But, Casey, go ahead and let us know where we can find you online.
Okay. Well, you can find me on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes with my books, California Sunset, California Wine, which will be out on Monday for 99 cents, and California Homecoming, which will be out on June 24th. My website is www.stories-about-love.com. So if you type in stories about love, I will be one of the first people on your list. And for Twitter, it's Casey Dawes Otho, because I ran out of characters. So it's Otho. Facebook, again, it's Stories About Love or Casey Dawes. Pinterest. And Goodreads. So I'm on all those places. I'd love to chat with you and learn about you. So, once
Wonderful.
Again, Stories About Love.
Wonderful. And Casey, one more time, your life coaching website as well, in case anybody heard that and their ears perked up and they thought, you know, I could really use those services.
Okay. It's wisewomanshining.com.
I love that. That's a great title, wisewomanshining.com. Love it. Well, Casey, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure, and I am looking forward to our Twitter chat on Thursday.
Thank you so much.
All right,
have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was the wonderful Casey Dawes, author. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Please stay tuned. I'm going to take a short break here, take a few sips of water before I bring on my next guest, who is the founder of a publishing company called Freedom Forge Press. His name is Eric Egger, and I'm really excited to talk to him about the work that he's doing, he and his colleagues, with Freedom Forge. So please stay tuned. We'll be back here in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the RightStream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's L-I-S-A-T-A-R-V-E-S. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
I'll never get used to these 10-mile runs. They are taking so much time out of my day.
Are you training for a marathon or something?
Diabetes runs in my family, and I heard if you lose lots of weight, you can prevent it. So I started running like crazy, and I cut my calories big time.
Oh, get real. You don't have to knock yourself out to prevent diabetes. My doctor said it's the small lifestyle changes you make that matter because it's easier to stick to them.
Wow, really?
It worked for me. 6 months ago, I started walking a lot and I stopped eating the fried stuff. I've lost 10 pounds. My doctor said I'm doing great.
I'll have to ask my doctor about this. I'd love to get my life back.
Talk to your healthcare provider. Losing a small amount of weight by being active 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier can prevent type 2 diabetes. To get your free game plan for preventing type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
In a moment, cancer changed our lives forever.
We were told nothing could be done to enjoy these final moments together.
But in that moment, when all seemed lost,
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital gave us hope.
Because at this moment, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital is saving lives with pioneering research and care. We're changing the way the world treats childhood cancer by sharing our discoveries with doctors and scientists everywhere.
And we'll never have to pay St. Jude for anything, ever.
At this moment, she wants to be in her own bed.
I want to be back at school with my friends.
I want to be outside playing.
Please take a moment and join St. Jude in finding cures and saving children. Visit stjude.org.
Hi, this is Daria Ann, author and founder of the RightStream Radio Network. If you're an author, writer, blogger, or just someone who enjoys reading and learning, I hope you'll tune in to our inspiring, insightful, and educational programs. Every Sunday, join author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvis for Just Believe at 1 p.m. Eastern, when she explores a variety of spiritual topics, including alternative healing modalities. A gifted intuitive from a young age, Lisa's book, entitled Just Believe, chronicles her journey from a childhood of seeing and communicating with angels to a career in which she uses her talents to help others emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Each week, She interviews experts in the fields of personal growth, spiritual development, and alternative medicine. Military Mondays with author and military historian John D. Gresham analyzes current events and issues from the perspective of the United States military. Tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern every Monday when John, author of such books as Uncommon Valor and journalist for the Defense Media Network, interviews accomplished guests on important topics like national security and defense and global terrorism. RightStream Tuesdays with Daria Ann airs at 1 p.m. Eastern and welcomes authors in diverse genres, including romance, drama, military history, spirituality, and politics. We also speak social, discussing the benefits and pitfalls of social media platforms and the numerous and plentiful publishing formats now available with various experts in order to help other authors navigate through new technology to reach higher levels of success. During every broadcast, we welcome your calls at 347-945-7246. And of course, the chat room is always open. Can't listen live? No worries. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archive. And be sure to join us for our weekly Thursday RightStream Twitter chat at 11 a.m. Eastern using the hashtag RightStream on Twitter. Rejoice in the flow of creativity with the RightStream Radio Network and the RightStream Twitter chat. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Daria Ann, your host of RightStream Tuesday. Thank you for hanging in there with me. I'm ready. Our next guests are on the line. And before I bring them on, I just want to read a little bit about them on the air. Our second guests are Eric Egger, who is, along with author and editor Val Muller, is the founder of Freedom Forge Press. And it's a small publisher seeking to publish high-quality fiction and nonfiction that promotes the themes of freedom, independence, and the spirit of the individual. It's a nonpartisan organization seeking to promote the idea of freedom and limited government to a readership that embraces and defends freedom as a birthright. I'm very excited to speak with them about all of the wonderful things that they're doing, including their forthcoming book, which is called Forging Freedom. It's a collection of stories from contributors worldwide that celebrates the freedom and the spirit of the individual. This anthology will be divided into three sections. One section will showcase stories of real-world fiction. A second contains true stories and nonfiction. And then a third section will treat readers to otherworldly fiction where the present-day real-world rules simply do not apply. They write, "We strove to find something for everyone, from science fiction to true stories to wild tales." At this time, Forging Freedom is slated for release in September of 2013, slightly behind schedule from our original planned release date of July 2013. And they say, stay tuned for more details, which I will try to get from each of them today. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I welcome from Freedom Forge Press, Eric Egger and Val Muller. Good afternoon.
Hi, Daria. Good to be with you.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, it's wonderful to have you both on the air with me. So why don't I give each of you an opportunity? Well, let's see, Val, let me start with you, and Eric, you can chime in after that. It'll be the same question, but tell us a little bit about Freedom Forge Press and what inspired you to start this publishing company.
Well, I think we both realized that it seems slowly our freedoms have been dwindling, and I always use this metaphor, it's kind of gruesome, but how they say if you put a frog in a pot of water and very, very slowly boil it, the frog won't even notice it's being boiled to death, and it will just die without protest. We kind of feel like that's what's been happening. Our freedoms are slowly being taken away. And so we were sitting there thinking, what in the world can two individuals do to promote freedoms and let people, you know, realize that we're losing freedoms and also appreciate the freedoms that we have? And we came up with the idea, since I'm an editor and author, why don't we open up a call for an anthology and start Freedom Forge Press?
Excellent. And Eric, do you want to chime in on that?
And I think just to echo off of what Val said, you know, we find every day there's examples all around us, and it goes through both parties, you know, Republicans, Democrats, it doesn't matter. It seems that people in government like to exercise power, And we know that that exercising of power comes at the expense of individual freedom and liberty. So just as an example, you know, we say that we like limited government. Someone might say, oh, you guys must be Republicans. Well, not necessarily, because we know that Republicans sometimes have some questions that they need to answer with regard to, you know, the freedom to marry the person that you love. Maybe there's issues about recreational or medical drug use that Republicans just they don't seem to have the right answer on when it comes to limited government. And we can find the same thing over on the other side. We're talking about, you know, things like environmental controls that start to seem less like helping the environment and more like just intruding on everyday lives. Thinking of things like there was laws proposed in California, for example, saying you have to have a white roof. You can't have a black car. Things like that, which just limit individual choice and freedom. And the answer we're always given is, well, it's for the greater good, so it's okay. And so the point that Val and I would like to make with Freedom Forge Press is that, you know, freedom is the greater good. We don't give up our freedoms for someone else's idea of what the greater good is. Freedom is the greater good, and that's really what we're trying to do.
Excellent. And, you know, and I love the idea that you're also about publishing fiction, because I find that most people, regardless of how they feel about freedom, and I think most people would on the surface would say, yeah, I'm all for freedom, but they want to be entertained at the same time. And I think when we're trying to reach a broader audience and sort of convey these concepts, it's so important to be able to do that within the package of an entertaining story. One example I'll point to, and I don't know if either one of you have had an opportunity to read her book, but Harriet Parks, Agenda 21, for example, it's a dystopia about what the world could look like, what our country could look like if that program was ever implemented. But, you know, as she said in many interviews with me, you know, who wants to read a 1,000-page boring, dry document? I wanted to create a fictional story after I did my research on it as to what could happen. And on the other hand, I've interviewed authors like Balazs Szabo, who survived the Iron Curtain, you know, escaped from communism in Hungary as a 13-year-old. And boy, I'll tell you what a compelling read that was. But I want to commend you because I think this is so needed. But again, on that fictional level, it's a great opportunity to reach a broader audience. Was that part of your thought process when you decided you were also going to publish fiction?
Absolutely, because, you know, people like stories. Storytelling has been a part of human history ever since we had the oral tradition, and people were, you know, talking about stories back then, even predating that when they were just drawing pictures on the wall in the caveman days. So telling
yeah.
stories is just something it's universal. It's a great way to try to express ideas and thoughts. And, you know, just as an idea, just an example of something people may not think, if someone had pitched Star Wars as a book to us, we would have been all over it because we see freedom themes in a lot of stories that are out there, a lot of movies that are out there. The themes are there. We're just trying to be another outlet for people who have those stories inside them so we can share those with the world.
Excellent. And Val, do you want to jump in here to add to that?
I think that we were really surprised when we opened up the call for this anthology. We got authors from around the world that just had these stories that they wanted to share. Some of them true stories, some of them wrote fictional stories based on truth. But we were shocked and, in a good way, delighted that there were so many stories that needed to be shared and people just were looking for the right outlet.
That's great. So now, are you? As I read from your website, is it still on track for release in September?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
We're looking about mid-September, and I think it may actually coincide with Constitution Day.
Wonderful. How perfect is that?
No coincidence, I'm sure.
No, that is excellent. So in terms of, now, if anybody listening out there is an author and maybe they're interested in, you know, seeing if you guys would be interested in their manuscript. Tell us a little bit about Freedom Forge Press and what formats you publish in and what are some of the things you do to promote authors.
Well, we're currently looking at some submissions that we've gotten in for novels. After the anthology is out, we're going to be focusing on getting our first novels out. And again, no real boundaries, just looking for things that are freedom themed. As an author myself, I've spent so much time, you know, sending out manuscripts and just getting a form letter rejection with no real help or feedback or anything like that. it was hard for me to tell, you know, am I close to being publishable or am I horrible? So one thing I try to do for others that are close, I do work with them. For the anthology, I did work with some authors one-on-one to improve their stories. So definitely if anyone has a manuscript and we see real value in it, we're definitely willing to work with them, you know, writing a couple revisions with them to make their story the best possible.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. Now, are you publishing books in just, you know, what are your formats? Kindle and e-books, or do you also are you also going to publish paperback? How does that work?
All of the above.
Okay.
It's going to come out electronically and in paperback format.
Wonderful. And that's fantastic. Now, how do you guys utilize social media? Because I mean, it's just been, I think it's been fun. I just maybe want you to comment on this. I for one, think that new technology has been such a tremendous boost for authors who, for whatever reason, couldn't get published traditionally, even though they may be truly talented and have a good story. And, you know, some of that could be bias within the publishing industry if they don't like the themes of a particular book. But overall, do you see it as a net positive? And what are some of the things you do to promote freedom, you know, your company and Freedom Forge?
Sure. Social media is an absolute net positive, I would say. And just for starters, it's how we found you.
That's right.
How we had the opportunity to talk today. As far as promoting Freedom Forge, promoting our ideas, I mean, this is just a way for us to get our message out for a very low cost. You know, it's really just the opportunity cost of taking the time to write some ideas down, maybe come up with a graphic that tries to communicate an idea. And with that, you can reach a lot of people. And when that message hits the audience that you're sending it to directly, you have the opportunity for that to go viral and for them to share that with their friends if they believe that the message resonates with them. And that's the kind of, I think that's the kind of chain reaction that you're looking for with social media, is to try to find something that will be of interest to people so that they'll like it themselves and want to share it with their friends. And that's a way for me to expand beyond just, you know, the people who've already decided they want to be connected with us and reach new people as well.
Right. That sounds great. Val, do you want to add to that?
Well, one of the things we wanted to do, when did you start the website for Freedom Forge?
January of 2012.
We wanted to start the website earlier, before we started publishing books, to try to build a following of, you know, like-minded individuals, people who share the love of freedom that we share. So we have that following, so we're not just, you know, blasting on Facebook by our book. We're actually starting discussions. We're having conversations about freedom-themed ideas. We thought that was important to start out. And our website, freedomforgepress.com, has some really cool features. There's the $16 trillion page, which is, we always have fun with that. How many, you know, slices of American cheese can you buy for $16 trillion, which is it 17 now, maybe, the national debt. So just fun stuff like that that'll interest people.
And give them a chance to share their ideas as well. I mean, we put out there that, hey, if you have something you want us to convert the national debt into, send it in, and we'll be glad to share it. I think one in particular we got was someone wanted to know how many marathon courses you could line with $1 bills. And I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but keeping in mind that a marathon's 26.2 miles and how many dollar bills it would require to paper just one of those, I think we were talking about 50 or 60-some thousand marathons that you could actually paper if you had the national debt and $1 bills. It's just an interesting
Wow.
way of providing a visual.
Absolutely. It certainly puts things into perspective, and it makes these concepts that seem so far out there and hard to fathom, you can really picture that, and it really hits home, for sure.
One of my favorite ones I'll just share was you could actually take a dollar bill and put it end-to-end. You would actually be able to reach past Saturn at this point. So we are truly talking about astronomical numbers.
Wow. That's scary. Some pretty scary stuff. Now, do you guys, so you have these features, so you have, like, forums set up on the site where people can interact, or how does that work?
Each one of the pages is enabled with comments, so people can add their comments. They can discuss back and forth. We've seen a few lively discussions where people are sharing ideas back and forth, sometimes a little friendly arguing back and forth. And, you know, I think that's all part of the greater conversation. You know, I don't think we view freedom as an absolute. It's something that is something that is tempered from time to time, depending on what the situation is. But, you know, that's all part of the conversation and the back and forth that we'd expect to talk about with our followers and the people who check out our website.
Absolutely. I wanted to let everybody know, too, we have a few people in the chat room, and anyone listening, if you want to call in with any questions for Val or Eric, the number is 347-945-7246. And if you're too shy to call in, you can always type a little message to me in the chat room, which I'm keeping an eye on, and let me know, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. I wanted to ask each of you about your careers, though. I just realized that I didn't give you an opportunity to kind of talk about yourselves individually. So, Val, let me start with you. So you are a published author. How did your career evolve as a writer, and was that something you always wanted to do, and what types of books have you written?
All right, well, ever since I could hold a pencil, basically, I knew that I wanted to be a writer. In first grade, I stapled together little pieces of notebook paper and wrote my first mystery novel, which was probably like all of 12 pages, and I brought it in for show and tell, I think, for the next 3 years. So I did always know that I wanted to be a writer. When I graduated from college, though, you know, the real world back in, and so I had to pick a career. So I did a year in publishing. I was an editor's assistant. Didn't really like it all that much. It was, you know, very stressful. I decided to go into teaching. I come from a family of teachers. So I'm actually a high school English teacher. That's my full-time day job. Because what other job can you read literature and discuss literature and themes and, you know, do all that kind of nerdy teacher stuff? So I'm a high school English teacher by day. And then during the summers, I write every day. During the school year, I get up around, 4:45 and make sure that I write first thing before my job takes all the energy from me. But I first got published, I think it was 2008. I had been a teacher for a couple years. The job takes a couple years of getting into to really be stress-free about it. So after about 3 years of teaching, I kind of went back to writing and started taking it seriously. I took a course just to kind of get back in the habit, and that's when things really started picking up. So I have a couple different books out. My mystery series is called Corgi Capers, and it's based loosely on my two corgis that I have. One of them is a really brazen, mischievous little corgi girl, and the other one is a fraidy dog. I call him Yoda the fraidy dog. He's afraid of almost everything. Literally, if you name it, he's probably afraid of it.
Aww.
So I based loosely on those two dogs, but it's a kid's mystery series. It's a fifth-grade protagonist, and he has a seventh-grade sister. And their two dogs go around and they solve mysteries together. So that series is two books out. And then I recently had my horror novel published, and this is a totally different publisher.
Wow.
This is not a kid's book. This is for adults. It's a supernatural killer head story. And both of those I went through small publishers rather than trying to find an agent and all that.
So you went through small independent publishers?
Right.
That. Yeah, excellent. Well,
I feel like it's a good balance. You don't have to go through the hassle of finding an agent and having personality conflicts and, you know, waiting for years for them to try to find you a publisher. But at the same time, you still have some help. You have another set of eyes. You have cover designers. You have someone helping to promote your work. So I thought it was the best balance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. God, and you're so versatile, Val, to go from kids' books to writing horror stories. I mean, that's incredible. Guys, Eric, before I get to you, I see that we have a caller on the line, and since I am the only one hosting here, I can't really screen the call, so if you guys don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and bring this person on and see what their question is.
Okay.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Caller from 718, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Eric or Val?
Yes, I just had one query. You mentioned the types of stories you folks wish to tell in the Freedom Forge Press. Could you give me, for instance, a 10-word blurb of an example of something you've published?
So some of the stories that we've accepted, one, for example, tells the story about a couple's experience with China's one-child policy. And I think that really brought to life the kinds of issues and the kinds of scenery that you deal with, whether you're talking about government agents showing up at the house and asking where so-and-so is and the intimidation that occurs there. I think that was a really interesting story for both of us, and that's one that you'll find in the anthology. A little more than 10 words, but that may give you a flavor of what you can see.
And really, there's no limit. As long as it's freedom themed, it can be sci-fi, fantasy. As long as there's an individual struggling for freedom or preserving freedom or fighting for freedom, we go from nonfiction to creative nonfiction, all the way to sci-fi fantasy.
Okay, well, it sounds like the next anthology is going to have to be completely based in America, around how to avoid being spied on by the NSA.
And, you know, speaking of which, if I'm not mistaken, this sounds very much like author Declan Finn. Is that who's on the line with us?
Yep, you found me out.
I'll just thank you for calling, Declan, and I want to give you a quick plug because he is the author of A Pious Man novel, which I had the opportunity to review and I highly recommend. So did you have another question for Eric or Val?
No, not off the top of my head. If I come up with one, I'll be happy to call in and harass you folks with it.
Well, great. Well, thank you. I'm so glad you called in, though. Thank you so much, Declan.
You're more than welcome. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Okay. And, yes, Declan is one that I recommend everyone follow. It's at A Pious Man Novel on Twitter. Eric and Val, you're still with me?
Yep, we're here.
So, you know, I'm so impressed that you are publishing so many different genres. I mean, it really opens up a tremendous amount of opportunity for authors all across the spectrum. I think that's phenomenal. And also, you know, in terms of the readership as well.
And, you know, you read in the intro, we are actually looking for something for everyone, and we recognize, you know, the section that starts to offer maybe an essay or two or some true stories, maybe that won't be as exciting for some people as the sci-fi story, and vice versa. Maybe people will not resonate with the sci-fi stories because they're looking for something a little more real. We try to put that in the hands of the reader and just give them a little bit of everything. And just to give you a quick idea of where all the stories came from, you know, Val and I didn't really start with a whole lot in the way of guidelines for our contributors. We laid the ground rules as, you know, here is what we're looking for, freedom-themed story. It can be fiction, nonfiction, something in between. It can be an essay as long as it's accessible to a reader. And really the only restriction we put on it other than that was we weren't really looking for anything steamy that might fall in the erotica category. And we were just, you know, we were just amazed at the different stories that were coming in from all over the world with a lot of different topics.
Fantastic. And so what is your turnaround time right now when, you know, somebody submits a manuscript? Let's say someone submits something to you today. What's the turnaround time at this point for them to hear back from you?
Our goal is 8 weeks. We're slightly behind as of now because of the anthology, but we are soon to be on track. The anthology is done now. It's with our pre-readers. We're getting blurbs and things like that and pre-release marketing. So now that we're finished with the anthology, we're back on track reading our submissions. So if anyone is listening who has submitted to us, we will be with you shortly.
That's terrific. And, you know, I may be one of those people because I'm just finishing up a ghostwriting project for a client, and sounds like it meets all the parameters. So I may be submitting something to you guys pretty soon here, hopefully.
Okay, great.
Outstanding. We'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah. I have to tell you, and I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent or, you know, diverge too much here, but ghostwriting is a challenge, you know, and it's been a really good one for me. I think it's really helped me to develop as a writer because you really have to get inside someone else's mind and be able to bring their concept to life. So it's been a challenge, but it's been one that I think has really helped me in a lot of ways. So I'm excited about it.
And not only that, but I think it helps the person that you're on whose behalf you're writing, too, because we have one of those stories in the anthology. It's told from the point of view of someone who escaped Vietnam. And, you know, I don't know if the memories were just too painful for this individual to try to express herself. I mean, my understanding from reading the story is, you know, she escaped Vietnam. She left with members of her family, and you know, we understand that she was really the only person to successfully make it to the United States. The rest of her family did not make it, and that was told through a ghostwriter. So, I mean, just what you said, I think you get into someone else's mind and can get those ideas down, but it also helps that person just bring that story to life and share their experience with the world where maybe they, for whatever reason, maybe they couldn't or just chose not to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and in this case, the author, you know, English is a second language for him. So, yeah, which is, I could tell you, I could write a book just about the whole experience in itself. We've had some funny exchanges, but, you know, and once I realized or I was able to pick up, like, certain, you know, with his accent, oh, okay, he means this. When he says that, it means this. You know, it's been a lot of fun, and he's a great guy. And, you know, I also found with ghostwriting, though, it's also crucial. It's incredibly important that you like the person you're working with. You know, Val, you mentioned, you know, working in a tough industry as an editorial assistant. And I just think, you know, from the standpoint or you know, in dealing with personalities of editors and authors, it's so true in terms of ghostwriting as well. So I've actually turned people down because I didn't feel like we would click our personalities. So anyway, let me get to another question that popped into my mind here. Are you interested at all in authors who maybe have been published by other independent agencies, but who are maybe looking to kind of break out and reach a new audience?
So like for an originally submitted work or like a reprint?
Yeah, maybe for a reprint or maybe they're thinking about, you know, when you were talking about your the author from Vietnam, it reminded me of an author that I know who was independently published through another self-publishing company. And I mean, it's just a phenomenal story. It's all about his experience in the Cambodian killing fields and how he went from being a slave to eventually escaping and then becoming one of the top leaders in the Cambodian Freedom Army and rescuing thousands of his fellow countrymen. And it's such a compelling story. And, you know, and it's not that he's approached me about this, but I was just curious what your policy is toward that and if any of these authors might be looking for another company if you would be interested in working with them.
Absolutely. You know, we'd be interested in working with them. I think for us it's about, you know, what is the idea being conveyed? What are the themes that are part of the story? We're more than willing to work with the author if there's any kind of writing issues. I think that Val has done a fantastic job of working with people just to refine ideas, refine grammar, language, imagery, things like that to really try to bring ideas to life. So we're not going to be penalizing anyone if someone else has had a look at their work. We'll be glad to take a look at it and consider it.
Yeah, as long as they have the rights and are open to additional edits, possibly.
Yeah, and you know, I think that that's so great that you offer that, that you're willing to work with them on those things. Because and a lot of these, you know, we're talking about foreign authors. A lot of them writing books on these themes have come from other countries where, you know, their freedoms have been curtailed, and it's the reason why they're here now. So I just think that's a great service that you're offering.
Well, and as a teacher, I mean, I do like, you know, helping other people, but I find working as an editor is the most rewarding thing I've done because the authors, like you said, they have a message. They really want to get it out there. They're having trouble, you know, conveying that in words to the readership, and they're so willing to work with us, and, you know, they're grateful. Once we give them ideas, they take them and they run with them, and you see their story improve tenfold, and they're happy, we're happy. It's just a rewarding overall experience.
Yeah. And, you know, even though, you know, I'm born and raised here, but English is my native language, but, you know, I can understand how difficult it would be for somebody if it's not your first language. And I my hat's off to anybody that masters it, because just as a writer, especially as a writer, you understand all the, gosh, I mean, it's just, it can be really complicated. So, again, I think that's great that you offer that service for those authors who struggle with that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, once we accept them under contract, there's no charge or anything like that for editing. It's all part of just who we are.
Fantastic. Now, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about the marketing side of things, because I always like to get into marketing of books. Because one thing I found just with writers in general, too many of them aren't willing or they're afraid, or for whatever reason, they just don't want to get out there and articulate their book in front of an audience, whether it's that audience is in person or whether it's over social media. You know, how important it – let's start with social media. I mean, how important do you think it is that writers are engaging with their audience? And, you know, for example, let's take blogging specifically. Do you encourage your authors to maintain a daily blog and to have a Twitter account and kind of get out there and interact with their readership?
I think that's something that readers really kind of expect these days is some kind of ability just to connect with someone, even if it's not directly to ask questions or talk to them on Facebook or something, just to know that they're out there and have that connection to them. So I think having that presence is absolutely critical. If you're actively using it, I think that'll work in your favor. It's definitely a plus. If you're not really doing anything except just having a presence, you know, I think you may get a check mark that you yourself any favors in trying to really build your audience.
And on our Freedom Forge blog, we're setting up interviews and guest posts by all of the authors in the anthology that are willing to do those. But we would hope that they'd have their own website, you know, at the bottom of the post that we can refer our readers to if they want more information. So I think it is important at least to have a website and a blog that you maintain somewhat regularly as an author.
Yeah, I think if you're an author operating in 1975 or 1980 where there is no social networking, there is no Facebook, no Internet even to speak of, I think you'd be fine not having any kind of outreach program, you know, because people back then may just assume that, oh, you know, here's a book in print. It must be good. Otherwise, they wouldn't have printed it. But now we live in a much different age where you can upload a file to something like CreateSpace, and within a matter of hours, you have a book that's out there. And I heard you talk a little bit earlier with your previous guests, you know, making sure the quality is there. I think when you start having things like a website, when you have a Facebook page or be active in Twitter or some other social media network, one that works for you, I think that people tend to equate that with some mark of quality and they start to look for those things.
Yeah, I agree with that, Eric. And I think I wanted to get your take on this. I do think that the, you know, there was maybe once upon a time a stigma associated with being an independent author. I mean, I hesitate to even use the word self-published because I think it sort of has like a negative connotation. But I think that goes away as people understand, you know what, yeah, I still need to be professionally edited. I still need to really have a nice blog and a couple of social media accounts where I'm connecting with people and really work that marketing side. So how do you guys feel about that? Do you think the once upon a time, I think a lot of people had the false impression that, oh, my gosh, if they're self-published, then – they must be horrible because nobody else would pick up, you know, they couldn't get a traditional publisher. I wanted to get both of your take on that.
I think it completely depends on the author. I don't think the stigma, like you said, I don't think the stigma is there anymore. Oh, you're self-published, you must be horrible. But there are those people that are self-published and they'll get, I guess, all their friends or family to go onto Amazon and give them, you know, 100% five-star ratings. And then you read the book and you read the first page and just cringe. You know, the English teacher in me is screaming and thrashing. And so I don't think the stigma is automatically there, but I think readers are careful still. They want to make sure that they're getting from a trustworthy source a review or, you know, acknowledgement that this book is, like you said, professionally edited. And I think if the author has a blog or a website and we can go and read their blog posts and read their website, we'll see what kind of writing they do and kind of get an idea for whether they do have, you know, professional editing or control of the English language or not so much.
And it helps if the website has been updated since 2007 or so.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not that you have to be on there every single day, every hour, updating something, but I think something that's reasonably current maybe within the last few months, if nothing else, just letting people know what you're working on.
No, I agree, absolutely. And I try to with my author blog, because I blog in a couple of different places, but I try with my author blog at least 3 or 4 times a week to post something. And a lot of, even if it's just a promotion about who's coming up on WriteStream, just to keep it out there. And then on the flip side of that, really use the social media to get it out there. I mean, NSA aside, I think we, as authors, they need to get over the fear of being out there on social media. But on the other side of that, of course, is the danger of, you know, losing your discipline as a writer because you're too busy chatting with people on Twitter. So there's definitely a balance to it. But in terms of the platforms themselves, which ones do you use the most and why to promote your work and the work of other people?
We're on Facebook and Twitter. And like you said, you can go crazy. We were talking about going on to Pinterest, possibly, right? But like you said, you have to balance your time doing things. I mean, we both have full-time jobs, you know, plus Freedom Forge is our second full-time job. So we have to balance it. I like Twitter. Like I heard you saying in the other interview, you can pre-schedule posts. That's really helpful. And Facebook, it's just really easy to, most of the people that we are networked with are on Facebook, so it's really easy to keep that network going. But if you join every single social network, I feel like you could literally spend your whole waking life on social networks.
It's true. Yep, to the detriment of, you know, your work and the writing that you're supposed to be getting done. So, you know, and I find that for myself. I literally just have to, like, close the windows on my computer. I once interviewed an author who said to me, you know, I have one laptop that has no internet. It's just, I use Microsoft Word for my writing, and I just have one laptop for that, and I just force myself to leave the other one behind, you know, for a certain amount of time each day. Otherwise, I won't get anything done. So,
And when I write, I actually prefer writing by hand. I sit, you know, somewhere secluded outside or, you know, I usually lay on the floor with a notebook and a pen and just no distractions, just write until my hand literally can't write anymore. And then I go onto my computer and, you know, Facebook, Twitter, email.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, Eric, do each of you, I'm going to ask you each of you as individuals, do you have, in terms of now, because you both have full-time jobs, and this is another full-time job, and I know what that's like because I'm involved in the launch of another website and network, but as far as on a personal level with your writing, do you find that you create a schedule where, okay, and Val, I know you mentioned this, you get up really crazy early in the morning and do that because you before your day gets off and gets crazy. Eric, do you set aside time like that as well? I mean, how do you work on your own writing?
I'll have to be honest with you. I think my scheduling techniques are a little more haphazard than Val. So if you were to look on Facebook or Twitter or our even our blog page, you'll probably see, you know, we'll have steady updates, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then maybe a gap. And I think some of that's just trying to balance life with what we're doing here, and sometimes it's just overwhelmed. I mean, I think I probably could have written a full-length blog post every single day for the last week about everything that's going on with the, you know, we find out about NSA, watching emails, watching web traffic, monitoring credit card transactions. Certainly those things are freedom-related, and it just feels a little overwhelmed, and it's just so present in the media. You know, there's not a whole lot I can add to that discussion right now. I kind of need to let that synthesize and, you know, let that come forward at another time when I can really, you know, feel like I have something to add to the discussion.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many great bloggers out there, too. I find that as well. Like, you know, I figure, well, do I really want to weigh in on this? Like, a million other people have already offered their opinion, and they've done it in an excellent, you know, way. They're excellent writers, and, you know, do I really want to wade into this? So I understand that dilemma for sure. But while we're on the topic, when I mentioned social media, where can we find you guys on Facebook? I want to make sure that we get all your platforms out there so people are liking your page and following you on Twitter and all of that good stuff.
Sure. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/freedomforge. And our Twitter account is freedomforge LLC. Freedom Forge was already taken, and I think, like someone else, Freedom Forge Press was just too many characters. The Freedom Forge LLC, and then, of course, you can find us at our website, freedomforgepress.com, and from there you can see our blog post, you can see our current call for submissions, manuscripts, you can visit the $16 trillion page, and we also have pages there that we're trying to build up with reader contributions for Freedom Won and Freedom Lost, just to tell quick little snippets of an example where we think freedom wins for the day and maybe an example where we think freedom hasn't won for the day, where we've maybe lost something.
Okay, so you're taking contributing writers to your blog then. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, that's fabulous. Okay, wonderful. So it's like you're building your own community, too, through your website.
It's a very slow process. I think I've talked to Val and other people that trying to get this started almost feels like trying to get a fire started with two wet sticks. But I think you just have to persevere. Sooner or later, the sticks will dry off and then keep going. Sooner or later, you'll start to see smoke, and then one of these days you'll have that spark, and that's it's all going to go from there.
And I think a big challenge is the fact that people with stories to tell. They're not necessarily writers, you know, people with these freedom stories. And so when you ask them to write something, even just for the blog, they suddenly clam up. They have stage fright. They don't feel like they can do a good job writing it. So a lot of it's, you know, friendly arm twisting to try to get them to submit something and feel confident about themselves to submit that. So that's been a big challenge.
Well, there are a lot of people in the chat room, including my friend Diane Student, who is host of Freedom's Wings on Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to encourage her and others she knows and her audience and anybody else in her network to get in touch with you guys and anybody listening, because I think there's a huge opportunity to be able to write for you. And it's a little scary. Even if you're a good writer, I think it's scary to have somebody else review your work. I mean, I went through that with my first novel. But when it's the right person, and I want to speak to this too, because I always talk to my authors and about writers groups, and I kind of get pros and cons with that, because certainly, as my first guest said, you know, writers are not immune to the green-eyed monster. And so if you as an author or an aspiring author are looking for that type of support, it's critical that you find people who are going to give you constructive criticism and offer ways of how you can improve. And it sounds like that's very much what you guys are all about. But Val, can you speak to that as a writer? Have you ever had that experience? And what should people look for? Obviously, I'm going to encourage people to work with you guys. But just in general, though, for any authors that are listening, what advice do you have for finding a good, supportive writers group?
You know, it's really hard to do. I'm in a writers group, but we don't critique each other's writing unless, you know, we do that over email if anyone wants. But we're more about talking about social networking ideas and things like that. Finding a group to actually read writing consistently and give feedback is extremely hard. You have to definitely match personalities. And like you said, sometimes there's jealousy involved. You know, you got an offer from a publisher and I didn't. Or, you know, you're a better writer and, you know, people being catty. So you just have to try to look up, groups like meetup.org. There are good ways to find writers groups, but you have to find the right personalities. If they submit to us and I give feedback on their manuscript, I definitely am only trying to, you know, make their manuscript a better product. So there's no cattiness, there's no jealousy. So they should definitely feel safe, you know, submitting something to us. We're not going to, you know, laugh at them or, you know, tear them apart. We're definitely here to be supportive.
That's great.
You know, people always say they're entitled to their own opinion. People are entitled to their own opinions, but they're not entitled to their own grammar rules. So
sometimes
we try to make some you know, edits here and there to try to strengthen the idea, make it a little more clear. And so, you know, I really rely on Val for that. And that's just, you know, don't take that personally. Transcend the personality there, and understand it's really just about trying to sharpen the idea. Make the picture, make the image just a little bit sharper, make it a little bit more vivid for somebody, and overall help the quality of the product.
Right. I actually had an author tell me they prefer not to use commas. So
are you kidding? They don't like to use commas? Oh my gosh.
They didn't quite know what to make of it. So yeah, the rules of grammar are pretty much there. They're not changeable.
Yeah. Those are pretty much set. And right, they're not up for discussion. That's pretty funny. How do you both feel about book trailers as part of a marketing campaign? Do you think they're a good idea? Do you utilize them at all?
I do. I think they're very important. I have one for Faulkner's Apprentice, and I think they're great because people, just being honest, people are lazy. They don't like to read, you know, even if it's a one-paragraph blurb, they'll skim it. But if you have a one-minute, two-minute YouTube trailer, they're much more likely to watch it. You know, there's pictures, there's music going on. So I think it is important, and we're definitely going to create a trailer for Forging Freedom anthology, as well as for our authors.
You know, it's been said that a picture is worth a thousand words, and I think we're just inundated with information sometimes these days. People will sit in front of a computer screen, they'll look at email, they'll look at websites, they'll look at paper documents, policies, whatever, all day long. And probably the last thing you want to do is read even just a paragraph-long description of this upcoming book. But if I can go on YouTube or some other website, click play, and kind of have someone else tell me about it, I think it makes it easier for the reader. It makes it a little more accessible. And in the end, that's really what we want to do, is get the idea out to the greatest possible market, to the greatest possible number of people.
That's fantastic. Now, let me ask you guys, do you have help behind the scenes? Because it sounds like you're doing so much for your authors. You're kind of giving them a full package here, and I'm just wondering when you both have time to sleep.
good question. It's pretty much just Val and myself at this point. We have a couple of friends that we have from time to time, family and friends that we've conned them into helping us with a review or helping us proofread or helping us, do a first look at something just to get their overall impressions. But as far as interactions with authors, kind of all the social networking stuff, it's really a two-person show at this point. One thing we did want to talk about was, in terms of helping us really get a grasp on successful marketing, help us think about refining our ideas. We are working with Kramer over at the Institute for Justice. That's a fantastic organization, fantastic guy. He's been very helpful. He's been very generous with his time with us. We really thank him for that, and, at some level, I would definitely say we would not be where we are today without their help.
Great. And, Eric, while we're on that topic of giving shout-outs, I also want to give a shout-out to our mutual friend Robert Bertrand, who is the reason I connected with you and Val in the first place. So,
yes.
Robert, if you're listening or if you listen in the archives, thank you very much, because I really appreciate the connection. So, and again, that's another Twitter success story. So anyone listening, if you're not on Twitter, you really are missing out on not only on opportunities to get your book published and out there, but to really meet some great people all across the country and all over the world. I mean, and as you guys were saying about some of your authors, I mean, technology has really made the world so much smaller, and it's made it possible to connect with people no matter where they are. And I just think it's just fantastic.
I think Val made comment earlier about, we're looking for people, we're looking to see if they have interesting ideas, looking to see where they're coming from. Of the 35 or so stories that are in Forging Freedom, I think three of them come from me just finding a person on Twitter who had something interesting to say one day, and I said, hey, would you be interested in writing a piece about that for our upcoming anthology? I probably sent that to more than one person and didn't hear back from a couple, but three said yes and three submitted something, and three will be part of the final product because of that interaction.
Terrific. That's great. And one of these Thursdays, I know you guys are so busy, but one of these Thursdays I want to get you both on the weekly Twitter chat, WriteStream Twitter chat. So just be thinking of that, and maybe we could coordinate it around the release of Forging Freedom and then also bring you back on here, of course, too.
Absolutely. Be glad to.
So, guys, we have about 5 minutes left, and I just wanted to kind of open the floor to both of you to maybe delve into some topics we haven't yet discussed. Anything that we haven't gotten to that you'd like to convey on the air?
I'll throw a treat out for your listeners. I think you can find it on our website, but we talked a little bit about, don't be shy about sending in your ideas. We're definitely an ideas-oriented publisher. We're not, we're not thinking that a manuscript has to come in perfectly polished from day one. So we will offer our submissions folder. It's submissions with an S on the end at freedomforgepress.com, and that'll come into us. And it's helpful if people in the subject line let us know what they're turning in, whether it's a short story, if it's a blog post, if it's an idea for the $16 trillion page, or just general comment. Hey, how you doing? It would be helpful just for routing that to the right area to help us put that in the subject line.
Terrific. So anybody listening, please do that. Val, is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we go off the air today?
I think Eric covered everything. I mean, like you said, we're definitely open. We're just looking for stories, and that's really the driving force of our company.
Well, I'm just
we're pretty sure at some point we will be doing a second edition of Forging Freedom. So we haven't put the call out yet, but so anyone who has some short stories in mind, get those drafts out, polish them up, and get them ready, because we will definitely be putting a call out in the future.
Terrific. Well, you guys, I just want to commend you for what you're doing, and I'm so excited to have made the connection with both of you, and just really just excited about all the great things you're going to be doing and all of the authors you're going to be, you know, getting out there into the marketplace. I just think you have a really bright future, and it's going to do a lot of good for everybody.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been an honor and a pleasure to meet you and talk to you this afternoon and your listeners, and we definitely look forward to any future opportunities we have to share Freedom Forge with your listeners and with everyone out there.
Okay, so before I let you go, once again, I just want to remind everyone to follow you. It's at Freedom Forge LLC, and the website is freedomforgepress.com. And your Facebook page is also Freedom Forge Press.
That's it.
All right, everybody. So connect with Val and Eric and all of those places. And, guys, I'll definitely see you on Twitter, and I look forward to bringing you back on the show when the book is released, for sure.
Wonderful. And thank you again for the opportunity.
All right, guys. Take care. Thank you. I'll be see you out there on Twitter. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, everyone, that was Val Muller and Eric Egger from Freedom Forge Press, LLC, so please check them out. I want to thank everyone for listening today. I was so excited to have an active chat room today, even though nobody had a question in the chat room, but we did have one caller, which was very exciting to me. So anyway, I'm going to sign off here, but I want to just remind everyone, if you want to listen to any of our archives, just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream, and you can listen to Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez and Military Monday with John D. Gresham, and, of course, Rightstream Tuesday with yours truly, which airs live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And as I said at the top of the show, I'm thrilled to announce, put out a little teaser, that I will be adding another program to the lineup, probably starting next month on a Wednesday evening, and it will be a call-in type of show. So I'm real excited about that. I can't really share any details right now until we get things all worked out, but I'm really looking forward to it, and I know you're going to love these two ladies. It's going to be a show that's going to be co-hosted. So until then, everyone, keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity, and I will see you back here for another Rightstream Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern next week. See you then.